The name of our God is not democracy. We are Israel, we have Bible, and we must go with our Bible.
We are afraid of a terror attack which could be happened at this kind of gather together of people.
It's just a different kind of story coming out of the Middle East because we always have the same kinds of stories.
It's a march that focuses on Jerusalem as a city full of sanctity and full of hope and full of wishes for peace.
An unbelievable, unexpected celebration in the city.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A Vancouver, BC area diocese vote on queer couple vows creates Anglican angst. Pride is celebrated in cities in Europe and the Americas, while gay and lesbian Grace Under Fire marks Jerusalem's first ever Pride Parade. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Brian Nunes.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending June 22, 2002. A Vancouver-area Anglican diocese has become the first in Canada to formally authorize blessings of gay and lesbian couples. While the new Westminster Diocese's gay-supportive Bishop Michael Ingham had blocked enactment of two prior synod votes in favor of the move because the margins were narrow, the latest vote was a landslide of more than 60%. He's ready to proceed based on the advice of experts in Anglican canon law. The motion approved by the synod specifies that the union ceremony will not resemble marriage and that priests who object as a matter of conscience will not be required to perform it. The union ceremony would have no legal weight.
Representatives of 9 of the diocese's 80-member churches walked out of the synod meeting in protest immediately following the vote and quickly issued a statement of dissent. 13 of Canada's 41 Anglican bishops soon followed with a statement declaring that New Westminster's decision conflicts with the moral teaching of the Holy Scripture and the tradition of the Universal Church. Ingham responded that those bishops serve more rural areas with pastoral needs different from his urban dioceses and called for mutual respect for those differences. The bishops who signed what they called a statement of regret also questioned if New Westminster exceeded its authority in the matter, although the head of the Anglican Church in Canada, Primate Michael Pearce, said the diocese acted responsibly. He declined calls to convene an emergency meeting of Canadian bishops, but the matter will be discussed at their regularly scheduled meeting in October. The head of Canada's largest Anglican diocese, Archbishop of Toronto Terence Finlay, praised New Westminster's action.
The head of the Global Anglican Communion, Archbishop of Canterbury George Carey, issued a statement that he is deeply saddened by it, asserting that it threatens the unity of the world church. Carey, who has been no friend to gays and lesbians, is due to retire at the end of October. The London Times reported this week that the British government's Church Appointments Commission will be recommending a gay supportive candidate to succeed him, Archbishop of Wales Dr. Rowan Williams, although there has been no official statement.
On Vancouver Island, the Nanaimo City Council issued its first ever proclamation of Gay Pride Day, reversing the result of a tie vote last month. The proclamation came in the face of a threat of a Human Rights Commission complaint and numerous demands from residents.
A Human Rights Commission complaint is expected in Alberta, where Edmonton Mayor Bill Smith refused a proclamation requested by the Edmonton Pride Committee. Smith told reporters, "I'm a Christian Catholic and it goes against my personal belief, but that kind of argument has failed before Human Rights Commissions in other provinces."
In the Canadian heartland, Premier Lauren Calvert this week formally apologized for Saskatchewan's refusal to issue a provincial proclamation of Gay, Lesbian, and Bisexual Pride Day in 2000. That apology came along with $2,500 Canadian dollars as part of a mediation agreement reached following a Human Rights Commission complaint by the Pride Committees of Saskatoon and Regina, the cities which alternate hosting of the provincial Pride Parade.
It's Regina's turn for Pride this year, but there won't be a proclamation of heterosexual pride to counter it. Last year, a threatened lawsuit by Christian Truth activists forced a proclamation of Family Pride Day, which in practice was a heterosexual Family Pride Day with a verbal attack on gays and lesbians in a rally at City Hall. This year, Mayor Pat Fiocco stood firm in refusing the conservative group's request, using its own hate literature to back up his decision.
Elsewhere in Canada, about 3,000 people marched this month in Winnipeg, Manitoba's 16th Gay and Lesbian Pride Parade, as the rainbow flag flew at City Hall for the first time. Calgary, Alberta's second Gay Pride Parade had hundreds of marchers and thousands of cheering spectators.
Peru's Movimiento Homosexual de Lima has so far been unable to obtain a permit for its planned Pride march and rally. Authorities in Lima's Miraflores district denied the group's application on the grounds that neighbors opposed the parade, but documented that opposition with just one letter signed by a single resident. The International Gay and Lesbian Human Rights Commission has called for letters of protest.
In Brazil, several thousand people danced in the streets as Pride was celebrated in Salvador, Bahia for the first time this week. Several hundred others celebrated Pride in Brasilia, the national capital.
Pride flags are flying at city halls for the first time in Berlin, Germany, and Aberdeen, Scotland. Aberdeen is celebrating Pride for the first time this year, while the opening parade for Berlin's 10th Pride celebration attracted 350,000 participants.
Earlier this month, about 100,000 people marched proudly in Hamburg, Germany, while in Tijuana, Mexico, about 300 people marched before thousands of cheering spectators, a crowd much larger than those for the city's seven previous Pride parades.
Last month's Pride observances included a march by about 7,000 people in Brussels, Belgium, and a march by about 2,000 people in Warsaw, Poland's Equality Parade.
There have already been numerous Pride observances across the U.S., perhaps the largest so far, drawing some 100,000 spectators in Boston, Massachusetts. But one of the smallest has drawn intense protest from the religious right. That was a gathering this week of staff in the U.S. Department of Justice, held in the department's Great Hall and keynoted by its number two, Deputy Attorney General Larry Thompson. The Department of Justice is responsible for protecting the civil rights of all citizens, and observing Pride there is nothing new. But religious right groups were grievously disappointed that it should go on with one of their own, Attorney General John Ashcroft, in charge, and several issued press releases criticizing his perceived endorsement of what they view as sin. Thompson's actual speech, which had been vetted and approved by Ashcroft, praised the work the department's gays and lesbians have done against terrorism.
Estonia's justice ministry disappointed gay and lesbian activists by omitting their interests from a gender equality bill it announced this week. The ministry had actually sent drafts to the Estonian Gay Association to solicit its opinion. But in the final version, there's no mention of legal recognition of same-gender partners or their co-adoption of their partners' biological children. Opposition members of parliament have submitted a formal inquiry as to whether a separate bill is in development on those topics.
In Britain, Liverpool's domestic partners registry began accepting applications this week. The ceremonial registry, which carries no legal rights, is the first in the UK open to couples from all over the country.
A bill to restrict fertility treatments exclusively to women in relationships with men was approved this week in Italy's Chamber of Deputies by almost a 2-to-1 margin. The bill covers a wide range of so-called artificial procreation techniques, which have not previously been regulated in Italy. Its fate in the Senate is uncertain.
Other world headlines this week featured transgenders. Japan this week saw its first legal ruling on the employment rights of transgenders, as the Tokyo District Court found in favor of a biological male fired for dressing as a woman on the job. The worker had first sought permission to work in her self-identified gender and agreed to a transfer on that basis. She had previously legally adopted a female name and is believed to be awaiting sex reassignment surgery. The judge found the employer, Shobunsha Publications, had not proven that her presence would hurt its business and ordered it to pay damages of more than 2.5 million yen.
In Britain, a high court judge rejected a trans woman's bid to revise her birth certificate to show her post-surgical gender. The UK has previously beaten a similar transsexual lawsuit in the European courts. But there's also some new hope for future legal reforms, as the British government announced it is reconvening an interdepartmental working group on transsexual issues.
And in India, another of the transgenders, known as Hijra, has won elective office, continuing a burgeoning trend of the last 2 years. This week, Kali Hijra was elected to the city council of Patna.
And finally, it seems that openly lesbian tennis legend Martina Navratilova had actually bet against herself before winning the doubles title at the Madrid Open last month, becoming at 45 the oldest woman ever to win a Women's Tennis Association trophy. The penalty for losing that friendly bet with her trainer, Giselle Tirado, was to return to singles competition for the first time since her retirement in 1994. She made good on it this week on the grass at Eastbourne in England, where she won 11 championships in her heyday. She promptly won her first-round match against 25-year-old world number 22 Tatiana Panova of Russia, becoming the oldest woman ever to win a WTA singles match. She lost in the second round against 19-year-old world number 13 Daniela Hantuchova of Slovakia. They played on center court to the delight of the fans, but to the disgust of top-seeded Jelena Dokic of Yugoslavia, who was shunted aside in favor of what she called some ridiculous match. Navratilova has no intention of playing any further tournament singles, although she told reporters she is interested in adopting a child or two. Navratilova has been a mentor as well as an idol for Hantuchova, but that changed in competition. Hantuchova said after the match, "Today was a little bit strange. She didn't tell me anything about how to play her."
That's News Wrap for the week ending June 22, 2002, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Brian Nunes.
Who's afraid of Virginia Woolf? Not a trio of Brits from the West End. Hear how she's inspired them to break into song later in the program.
Come out, everybody. Listen to your song, yeah. Come out, everybody. Let the guitar roll, let it roll.
Hello, I'm Carol.
And I'm Maria.
And together we're Zrazy. And we're crazy about This Way Out,
the international lesbian and gay radio magazine.
Despite increased tensions from the escalating rash of suicide bombings and military retaliations, and over the strident objections of Orthodox Jewish politicians and religious leaders, history was made in Jerusalem on June 7th as that city under siege experienced its first ever gay and lesbian pride parade. This Way Out correspondents Iran Sekural and Ilan Vaitzen were there.
Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam Shehekiyanu Vekiyemanu Vegiyanu Lazman Hazeh.
On June 7th, 4,000 people converged at Zion Square in downtown Jerusalem to kick off the city's first ever Pride festivities. The event began with a parade up the Ben Yehuda Pedestrian Mall that continued onto King George Street and ended at Independence Park, where there were a variety of speakers and performers from the local gay community. It was referred to by the participants as an historic event for the gay community in Jerusalem, a place that is holy to the world's three monotheistic faiths. The city has become ground zero in the bitter conflict between Israelis and Palestinians. The event itself took place in the center of the city, where residents and business people have endured a constant wave of terror attacks by Palestinian suicide bombers. Not only did the event's organizers and participants have to worry about the possibility of a terrorist act during the celebration, there were also numerous threats made by the city's religious community to disrupt the occasion with acts of violence. A lot of Jerusalemites felt that as a holy place, the city was not ready for such an event.
Jerusalem is the center of like the spiritual world and the Jewish world and even Christian world and Islamic world, and all of these three religions hold sacred, like the Torah that says, that very clearly has opinions about, you know, homosexuality. I don't know what it's going to be like. I know what it's been like in I know what it's been like in New York and San Francisco and in Tel Aviv, and like just like a flagrant show of some of it I totally don't agree with, just like a lot of, you know, sexuality and like nakedness, like just blatant out there, and I do not think that Jerusalem is ready for that.
We wanted to know what it's like to be a gay teenager in such a complicated place, where so many different types of people have to share a city torn apart by religious and political conflict.
I think it's pretty difficult being a gay teenager anywhere. It really depends on exactly where you live, because I personally don't experience any special problems. I feel pretty much fine, but if I was living in Mea Shearim or in the Arab parts, I might have had more problems.
Although there was a much smaller group of protesters than was expected during the day, those who came to protest were very emotional about their cause. It seemed as if the event was experienced by many as a serious threat to the sanctity of the city. We spoke to one of the protesters on the street.
You are against this march, right?
Okay, of course.
Why are you against this march?
Because first of all, it's against our Bible. Most of the people of Israel don't agree with these things. But we have a democracy government that take control on our people and our land. And they say what they want. They don't care what the people think. And we don't allow to give legitimation to these things.
But do you think that in a democratic society, everybody should have the right to fight for their rights?
The name of our God is not democracy. The name of the God of U.S. is democracy. We are not U.S. and you are not Europe. We are Israel, we have Bible, and we must go with our Bible. With the rules of the Bible, not a democracy. Democracy cannot be above the Bible.
We talked with Jerusalem police spokesman Kobi Zarhan, who told us about security preparations given the threat of violence perpetrated by anti-gay protesters and the ongoing possibility of a terror attack in the city.
We were very suspicious about what is going to be happened. We suspected there might be interference to this parade, but we arranged to secure the parade without any problems till now. The main fear was the security, because we are afraid of a terror attack which could be happened at this kind of gather together of people. This is the main issue we are dealing with for a long period of time. The second issue, we have been arranged our forces to prevent any kind of other interference to the parade, such as throwing stones, throwing vegetables or something like that, which we heard that might happen.
We also wanted to find out more about the relationship between the police and Jerusalem's gay and lesbian community.
We are talking to the homo-lesbian community as we are talking to any other community. There is no difference whatsoever between the communities in Jerusalem. We see them and we treat them like everybody else, which they are. They are like every other person.
The event raised a lot of international media interest and was attended by journalists from a variety of networks, including CNN, BBC, and even Fuji TV from Japan, who were here to bring the bizarre contrasts on the streets of Jerusalem back home. Barbara Platt from the BBC.
I think it's a different way to look at Jerusalem. We see so much violence and depression, and it's just a different kind of story coming out of the Middle East, because we always have the same kinds of stories.
The event turned out to be a major success, and it gave many city residents who saw the day as a demonstration of pluralism and tolerance a great deal of hope for the future.
Oh, it was beautiful. It was really fun. I'm happy to see it. It's not something you can exactly see every day. I think it does show about tolerance. You can see flags hanging all around the streets. It's nice, really. Made me feel good.
The Jerusalem Open House is the major GLBT organization in the city, and its work has been instrumental in securing a place for the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender population in the community. We talked with Haggai Elad, the executive director of the Open House, who spoke of his feelings about the day.
It's very emotional, very moving. It's really a day of celebration, of maybe an unbelievable, unexpected celebration in the city. You know, so many people are here, and I think that what's bonding them is not just the joy of this event, but the disbelief that this is actually happening today, right now, in this city. It's amazing.
What made the Gay Pride festivities different in Jerusalem than in Tel Aviv and perhaps unique in the world is that a religious perspective played a special role in the event. The day began with traditional blessings in Hebrew, Arabic, and English, and was attended by a variety of Jewish religious leaders in the community who came to show their support. We spoke with openly gay Orthodox Rabbi Steve Greenberg.
Well, it's Jewish, but it's also, beyond being Jewish, it's a march that focuses on Jerusalem, on Yerushalayim, as a city full of memory and full of sanctity and full of hope and full of wishes for peace. It's a city that is, you know, destined to be a place of, I would say, you know, gathering of the human experience. So I see this as a very Jewish Mitzad Gava, but also a very spiritual one, even beyond the Jewish definitions, one that can include Jews and Muslims, Christians, one that can include Palestinians and Israelis, one that can include gay and straight people, helping to create a Jerusalem that truly is a kind of vision of a sacred and holy community.
Jerry Levinson, the chairperson of the Open House, spoke of the importance of the parade for the countless gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgender people who remain closeted in Jerusalem.
And as important as it is that it changed people's consciousness from outside the community, those who condemn us and don't accept us, it's equally important, or perhaps even more important, that the tens of thousands of gay, lesbian, bi, and trans people in this city who cannot come forward and participate in a parade or an event like this will see that we are here and that we are alive and vibrant and working to express ourselves culturally, socially, in any way that we see fit, and that they deserve this as much as we do. I think it will help those people. People must now see that there is a large and vibrant gay, lesbian, bi, and trans community in this city. They can no longer ignore us. And we deserve recognition and the rights of any other community here.
Speaking to the 4,000 participants gathered in Independence Park, he ended the day with a strong, resounding message to those in Jerusalem who would try to break the spirit of tolerance and inclusion in the Holy City.
אני אגיד את זה רק פעם אחת. רק פעם אחת. ובאנגלית. כי אתם לא מבינים כשאומרים לכם את זה בעברית. We're here. We're queer. Get used to it.
Reporting for This Way Out from the first ever gay and lesbian pride parade in Jerusalem, we are Ilan Weitzen
and Iran Sikurel.
Novelist, poet, critic, and feminist essayist Virginia Woolf is widely regarded as one of the greatest writers of the 20th century. More often remembered for her tragic suicide than for her life-affirming work, this pivotal literary figure of the period between the world wars became a legend in the 1960s when her name was used in the title of that play by Edward Albee. Virginia Woolf was a central member of the Bloomsbury Group, which included men and women of all sexual orientations among its philosophers, artists, and writers. She founded Hogarth Press with her husband, Leonard Woolf, and published her early books, as well as those of T.S. Eliot, E.M. Forster, and others. A new CD from the UK called Woolf, A Portrait in Song, is a collection of contemporary songs inspired by the life and times of this complex woman, including two songs reflecting her passionate relationship with writer and poet Vita Sackville-West. There's one cut in particular about Woolf's first introduction to the Bloomsbury neighborhood she would one day help to make famous that has a message of hope we thought might be appropriate to end this week's program. As you listen to this expression of Woolf's experience of leaving bad times behind and awakening to a new day of possibilities, send out your own positive thoughts for both pride and peace in the bloodstained Middle East.
As I walk down these streets, I breathe a different air. As I walk down these streets, I feel like I'm floating on air. We left the dark behind us, we walked into
That was Breathe a Different Air from the new CD, Wolf, A Portrait in Song. It's the creation of a British trio, David Harwood-Smith, Roger G. Taylor, and vocalist Alan Chappell, who've written music and performed together in film, television, contemporary albums, and West End shows. For information about the CD online, point your browser to www.portraitsongs.com. Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Brian Nunes, Graham Underhill, Jason Lynn, Chris Ambage, Rex Wagner, and Iran Sekuro and Ilan Weitzen contributed program material. Journey to Jerusalem was performed by the German-Turkish band Surprise, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and through direct charitable donations from our listeners around the world. To learn how you can help in This Way Out's critical struggle to stay on the air, please visit our website at thiswayout.org, email us at tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on KUGS Bellingham, Washington, 3CCC Ballarat, Victoria, WHRW Binghamton, New York, and on global shortwave station RFPI and more than 125 other local stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please stay tuned.